Hey friends, mark your calendars. The Intentional Motherhood Retreat is coming up October 23rd through 25th in Portland, Oregon. It's a meaningful few days to slow down, connect, and refocus on what matters most in your motherhood journey. Also, some exciting news, Intentional Fatherhood has officially launched on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. So go subscribe, check out the first few episodes, and share it with all the fathers in your life. For more details and registration info for the Motherhood Retreat, you can go to intentionalparents.org, or you can go check out our new website for fathers, intentionalfatherhood.org. You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. Tyler Staton, welcome to the podcast. So glad to have you.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be with you.
First time.
Yeah.
First time.
Maybe the last. We'll see how it goes. Only time will tell.
We'll see. You're wearing all white. I'm wearing all black. What a good day. Yeah. So if you're on YouTube seeing this or anything like that, like okay. You can go see this was not on purpose, but it does seem funny. Mm-hmm. Dude, I'm excited to have you on. For a lot of reasons, and we will, I'm sure, touch on them throughout the conversation. There's so many different parts of your story that I'm so excited to highlight. And you're not only a pastor, as we've talked about, and a father, you're an author. And that's been a whole thing that we were just talking about in a second. But before all that, you're a father. So would you just introduce us, for anyone that might not know, the people that you spend the majority of your time with and invest into, your wife and your boys? Would you introduce us to them? Who are they? Ages and stages and all that?
Yeah, my wife is Kirsten. We've been married 14 years this week, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. And we have three little boys.
Yes.
We have Hank, who's 8, almost. He's about to turn 9. Simon, who's 7. And Amos, who is 3.
Busy, dude.
Yeah, very fun.
Energy, like a lot of boy energy.
Oh yeah,
dude, that boy.
They're rowdy.
That boy energy stuff. We have one boy and three girls, and it's so interesting to me when I talk to families, friends that have the multiple boys situation. It is just like through the roof, energy wise. Yeah. You know, a lot of people, if they follow Jesus in one sense or another, I think they know a lot of what you do. You also lead 24/7 prayer for this whole part of the thing called the U.S., as I understand it, correct? Mm-hmm. And you have your hands in so many different beautiful things that God's doing, I think, right now. And it's so cool to watch, so cool to see. Your book, which I'm going to let you share the title of your second book you wrote, Praying Like Monks.
Living Like Fools.
Living Like Fools. The reason I'm asking you to say is because I already tried to repeat it and then said it the wrong way. And there's nothing more embarrassing than someone being like, let me tell you about the book and say the wrong title. Yeah. So, that book specifically on prayer, and I want to talk about prayer today, comes from such a deep personal place for you. Mm-hmm. I want to touch on that. And you recently just released a book, Familiar Stranger, about the really beautiful work of the Holy Spirit in all of us in different ways. I won't steal any of that thunder from you, but also just to say to anybody that is interested in those titles, check out the show notes, check out those books. But I actually don't fully want to even talk about the books today. I kind of want to talk about your journey. You recently have had a really unique journey, and in some way private, in some way public, because your role is public to an extent, right? And so couldn't just be a private thing. But would you just take us on the journey of the last couple of years? And I have a handful of questions from that space, but this journey that you've been on in your own health, I'd love to hear that story.
Yeah, I very unexpectedly was diagnosed with cancer. A little over 2 years ago now.
Okay.
And that totally came out of nowhere. It was an utter shock. Mm. I was seeing a doctor for the equivalent of a physical, like it was a check-in appointment, and was directed straight from his office to a different part of the hospital. I was rushed ahead of everyone in the ER. And they were like, we need to do a CT scan to confirm this. We need to operate on you today. So it was just nuts.
That.
Yeah, it was a crazy circumstance. I wasn't feeling bad or anything. And then I had a cancerous tumor removed, and they biopsied it and said, yep, it was definitely cancer, and we got it, and we got all of it. You're good. And so I had the shortest and wildest cancer journey ever. It was quite surprising because there's no cancer on either side of my family or my wife. So neither of us had any experience with this, and there wasn't any genetic reason to think I might be susceptible to cancer. And then 6 months later, I did have a lot of pain in my abdomen. Honestly, to be completely honest, I thought I had kidney stones. I was like, man, this is not ideal. I guess I'm going to urinate a rock at some point and it's going to be over with or something. But but instead, my wife really wanted me to go see my oncologist, and I did. And it turned out that I had two tumors at the highest stage in my stomach, both of which were attached to vital organs. And that led me to becoming the youngest cancer patient receiving treatment in this particular hospital and the one receiving the most toxic form of chemotherapy, both at the same time. And the next year of my life was very limited because I was very limited.
Yeah.
And now, as I sit with you, I am just, I've just hit the 1 year mark of being cancer free. So I'm delighted to be able to share that.
Wow.
And like many journeys, you know, I don't know where mine goes from here. What I can tell you is the year of going through chemotherapy was the hardest and most spiritually formative of my life to date. And if I could go back and erase it or have just had a healthier, I wouldn't. Because the work that God did in my soul was more important to me and better than the pain that I lived through in my body. But that's kind of the biggest theme in my life in recent history. Yeah.
I want to talk about the family dynamic in a second, but you said the most spiritually formative. Obviously, in one sense, that's got to be insanely personal and deep, and things that you may never share with anybody as far as how deep and exactly what that was like. At the same time, would you give us just like a little window when you say that, like it was the most spiritually formative, maybe just to highlight a couple of the ways in which that process of having to basically walk through the valley of the shadow of death, what are some of the things that either that formed you or that you were made aware of, or that God was doing, like, just, and take that wherever you want. I'm just thinking there's so many beautiful moments I'd love to hear.
Yeah. I mean, there's a number of different things, but two that are front of mind right now is I think that I met Jesus as suffering servant and I've primarily known him as resurrected Lord. I would say that the intimacy that I knew with Jesus through the journey of my own suffering and the way that that made me see things in the gospels that I hadn't before, pray in a different way than I had before, things like that has really shaped the way that I think can see a more fully formed understanding of the spiritual life and a more clear and full picture of who God incarnate really is. And then the second thing I would say is, you know, you just don't know the prayers that you will pray when someone suddenly tells you, we don't know if you're going to die or not.
Yes.
Until someone tells you that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had a couple different experiences of receiving really alarming news from a doctor who then was going like, yeah, we don't, you know, your days might get cut short. Let's try to figure that out. Where, you know, I received that news and then was alone in a doctor's office. And, you know, the first moment I got alone, I think you begin talking to the Lord, or at least I began talking to the Lord. And I still remember the prayers that came out of me then. and what I prayed about and what I didn't. Mm. And so I think the gift of suffering, if you get to live beyond it, can be the invitation to live in the present in light of your own inevitable expiration, and therefore to try to order and prioritize your life to what you value deepest and what you... I now have a clearer picture of what I will be thinking about on my deathbed.
Wow.
And that can be a great gift because I'm planning on still being a really long way from it.
Wow.
And so I can get to live my numbered days, or at least try to keep in step with what do I truly value most in the fragile life that I'm living.
Wow.
And so actually a lot of that had to do with giving less of my imagination, less of my time to my vocation, embracing the relational limits that I really have in my life, and giving more of myself, or giving myself differently, to my children.
Wow.
So, yeah.
When you say giving yourself differently to your children, tell me more about that. I'd love to know, maybe give it, maybe just a snapshot. What was that before you had the cancer's journey? Now, what does it look like now?
Yeah. I'll give you a moment that encapsulates it for me.
Okay.
And obviously I think this would be different for anyone based on personality type and shadow and everything like that.
Yeah.
But I have this really vivid memory of coming home from work.
Okay.
And it was a Tuesday evening. In this stretch, I was coaching Hank, my oldest son. I was coaching his basketball team.
Okay.
But Simon, his younger brother, who's less than 2 years younger than him, I would always take him to practice and let him practice with the team.
Okay.
Just because he likes basketball too. No one really cared. And it was a way to give Kirsten a little bit more space
totally.
During that time. So I was rushing home from work, and I was getting there about 30 seconds before I had to leave to make it to practice on time.
Mm.
And I have to be at practice on time
because
I have the key to the gym that we're going to unlock, you know, like everyone else will be waiting outside. And I'm always doing this. Like I'm always cutting it as close as I can. It wasn't like this was a particularly busy work day. It's just
like, this is how it
works. I've constructed a life with no margin.
Yeah.
And so I come home, I text Kirsten on the way. I'm like, have the boy's shoes on. I'm going to roll in and just have him run out the front door. And so that happens. And then Simon, as only like he was, I think he was 5 at the time, and it was only a 5-year-old could do, he somehow attempts to enter the car from the wrong door multiple times. You know, there's only one door has a car seat in it that Amos needs to sit in. I'm like, nope, go around to the other side. He's like, okay, and runs halfway to the other side, then runs back where he started. And I'm like, nobody, the other side. You know?
Yes.
And in that exchange, I was like, Simon, go to the other side of the car.
Yeah.
Just like that. Like, yelling at him. I was just, I was like
factual.
Stressed.
Yeah.
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 I was stressed. And so I was clear. And he looked nervous. Like he could feel stress.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
Yep. And he ran to the other side of the car and then jumped in. And I could tell he was nervous and a little bit worried he was in trouble.
Mm.
And then I was like, hey, buddy, how was your day? And he was kind of like, oh, it was okay. You know, he was and he was still nervous. And I just had this moment where I realized, like, you know, I'm checking the box. Mm. Like, I'm doing the thing. I'm managing to pastor a church and write books and script prayers for people to pray around the world and things like that, and still coach my son's basketball team. But the way that I'm showing up, because this was the first time I'd interacted with him that day. I left early for work before he was awake. And I just thought, like, oh, this is my first time talking to my son today, and I'm making him nervous.
Wow.
And that isn't who I want to make him.
Mm.
And it's not how I want him to remember me as I was bringing him to basketball practice. And so just things like that, like, okay, I've got to construct a life with margin because I can't communicate love if I'm in a hurry.
Yeah.
Even if there's love in my heart towards someone.
Tell me about, like, on a practical level, what does it look like now? You're saying I need to build a life of margin. Anybody that's listening is a higher capacity person who is most likely has kids and has all these different complexities on our life. And no matter who you are at a certain age and stage, you just have a lot going on if you're alive in this moment. My curiosity is what does it look like now? Like, how have you built in a life of margin just practically? Like, what changed in your day-to-day schedule? What changed in your rhythms practically? How did you go about that? I'd love to just help people kind of connect that dot.
Yeah, lots of different things. So I'll just share one practical one and one relational one. So a really practical one is I've always prayed the examine on the way home, including that day, which is hilarious. It wasn't very effective informing me, but the examine is just a way of reviewing your day with God and entrusting to him all that's been done and all that's left undone.
Mm-hmm.
So the examine traditionally in church history is prayed like on one's bed right before you fall asleep.
Yes.
I pray it in my commute home because I've found that it helps me to show up as who I want to be. I've surrendered, you know, the part of my life that I've been showing up to vocationally, and I want to show up differently in my home, not littering my home with the collateral of my workday. And so that's always been a practice in my life, and I think that's a key one. But I also just began to build in a really simple 30-minute margin and buffer period at the end of my day every day where the things that I need to take care of before I can leave, I leave, I'm able to do. Okay. And when there aren't any, I have a little bit of a slower, more easygoing trip home.
Okay.
And I began to build in, I just started leaving work 15 minutes earlier.
Okay.
You know, so I just changed my calendar and ended my workday a little earlier than previously. So I had more time to get home.
Okay.
And then I've added in, and this is a spiritual practice for me.
Okay.
But it's from 5:30 PM to 6 PM for me every night. Is an event on my calendar that just says play with boys. And so I just I just realized, like, you know, my kids are young and right now they still get really excited when I get home and they want to, like, get on the ground and wrestle me or play basketball with me in the driveway or whatever. And I don't really want to do those things at the end of the day. Like, I'm worn out. When I get home,
honest.
I'm like, is there food?
Yes.
You know, is there a couch I can lay on?
Yes.
That's,
yes.
I'm tired emotionally from the day.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, these days are fleeting that they're going to want to do that with me.
You're so right.
And so I've just decided, in the same way that I've built other disciplines into my life, this feels like an act of prayer. Just to choose to delight in my children in this stage of their development.
Wow.
And so I made those changes in my calendar.
Okay.
One relational thing that I did that's been extremely helpful to me in this life stage with small children is I set what is for me my relational limit. And, you know, I'm a particular personality type and everything. I'm not a crazy introvert or a crazy extrovert, but I just realized, I'm not going to make everybody happy.
That is such
an important. And everyone, lots of people in my life want more from me. So how much do I have to give and where do I want to give it? And I prayerfully thought about that for a little while. And I decided I have the relational capacity to truly show up for my wife, my children, and three friends. And so I listed, I have in my rule of life, the names of those three people.
Wow.
And then my four closest coworkers. Wow. So I'm like, all right, here's the close coworkers. It's like, I'm there for you.
Yeah.
And
you have to be, you're
yeah, if you want to chat more about something random throughout the day, of course I'm going to have time.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. And I have three friends. I'm like, this friendship matters to me.
Mm-hmm.
I want to pour into it. I want to prioritize time.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be the sort of person that is showing up, not just in a crisis, but like, hey, can I borrow this? Of course you can. I'll bring it to you. You know,
where
there's enough space in my life to be a good friend.
Wow.
And that's my limit. Because what happens is for me, inevitably, I try to do multiple things at once.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, this family really wants to connect. Okay, let's have them over for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm not spending a night out away from my children. But the truth is, I'm not present to my children that night.
No,
like,
no.
You know,
yeah.
I'm trying to get them to watch Lion King or something because I'm talking to these people, you know. And so anyway, it's just been those simple changes of just acknowledging, hey, in this stage of my life, I'm going to let a huge number of people down.
Mm.
And here's the people's names who I'm not okay with letting down.
Wow.
And that's been really freeing for me.
Wow. In your role, you said, you know, obviously we're sitting in, you know, Bridgetown. You're often on the stage communicating, speaking, especially with writing and especially with leading a church and especially with now having responsibility and partnering with 24/7 prayer. You know, your world of influence or people wanting little moments or like you had highlighted is growing. And I just find it so interesting that not even interesting, but just inspiring in the best way to give people hope. Like you can actually slow down. You're a great example because your world's growing and at the same time you're shrinking your world of which you can actually be present to people. And what a gift of love to your wife, to your kids, to those friends. I mean, what a gift to know that those people have your heart and attention. I'm thinking of your wife through all this stuff. Like,
mm-hmm.
I obviously don't know her. We've met before, but I am just so curious. You know, you talked about prayer and then I want to talk about prayer with your kids in a minute. But how was this journey for her? And obviously you can only speak in part for her, but for her, I would just imagine the amount of silent suffering to an extent that she's had to hold through a lot of this or just maybe had to deal with it in a different way. Your role is public, so now all these people know. And unfortunately, what we've seen and you've experienced, I'm sure, is well-meaning people sometimes when you're suffering say a lot of interesting things, not always helpful and sometimes even hurtful. And but I'd be curious, you know, for her, what was this process or as you've processed, what has this been like for her to have to hold this with you? And I would just be curious of like the conversations that have emerged and how she has processed some of this. And again, I know you can't speak fully for her, but as her husband, I'd love to hear like what this has been like for her. We want to let you know about a new offering, a 31-day prayer devotional entitled Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth. This book was born out of desperation. I didn't know how to lead my kids spiritually, so I started praying. Honest, dependent, daily prayers. Jeremiah 29:12 says, "Then you will call on me, God says, and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you." If you want to learn more, head to intentionalparents.org. And if you partner with us at $25 a month or more, we'd love to send you a copy as a thank you.
So for Kirsten, you know, I would say, if she was sitting right here, she would say, I'm just now beginning to process it.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Because there are so many, you know, for the form of chemotherapy I went through, the drugs I was taking were so toxic that so I went through a full week of chemo Monday through Friday, 5 hours a day in the hospital. And then I would get 2 weeks off for my body to recover. But there was a 10-day stretch. So 10 days out of every 3 weeks that I had to be quarantined in my house because my my internal world was so toxic from the drugs. Like if any bodily fluid from me, like sweat, anything like that, were to get onto the skin of another family member, they would likely become vomiting ill. And so we had to double wash and sanitize all of my clothes. I had to sleep in a bed in my basement. And then we had to really sanitize the sheets and the room. Had to keep, you know, any clothing, like if I sweated on a t-shirt and then one of my children touched it, or I used a napkin and had saliva on it and then one of my children. Yeah, so it was, and you can't explain that to little kids.
No.
So just things like that that my wife was helping to manage. And then, like, I'm sick, lying in a bed in the basement, and she's trying to raise children, things like that. So I think we were just in survival mode.
Yes, of course.
You know, and for me, it was because my body feels so limited. And for her, it's because she suddenly had four people
that she had
to take care of. Because I was probably more high maintenance than her one-year-old, you know? And so she did an amazing job of being incredibly supportive. But yeah, I mean, of course, like, people said all kinds of stuff to her. And a lot of it was incredible. And a lot of it was bananas. But I think she was okay kind of with that aspect of our lives. I think more so she would say right now she's just beginning to come to terms with what that journey did to her.
Of course.
But I think what I would say is that both of us have processed that slowly in partnership with the Spirit of the Living God, in partnership with one another, and with some close, trusted, wise friends. And that the result of going through that together is that both of us, I think, have come out the other side seeing one another through grace more fully and in a more restored way than we did before. Because I think we've both seen one another's fragility more. And yet also found a way to not be threatened by our own fragility or the others, but to love the other through it. Like for it to be endearing almost see like, oh, this is who you are and this is how you react to this. I'm so different than that. I love who you are. You know, I think both of us would say that to one another.
With the suffering piece and how much that was, that makes so much sense. I mean, like, my wife and I have had a handful of different health tragedies and concerns, even with our kids. And there's these moments we all process, like I process in real time. So I'm like working through this as an event is occurring.
Yeah, me too.
She goes literally to like this different part of her brain that she can just shut down the emotion side and she goes completely into the best caretaker you could ever imagine about how she feels about the equation or the situation or the fear of the future. All is compartmentalized in this little place and she can put it somewhere else and she can just be present and there and serve. And then once the dust settles fully and she really does know she can, you know, come out of that box, so to speak, then she's like, that's when a lot of stuff happens, usually a lot of feelings. It almost feels confusing because you're like, we've been out of this for a lot, like years even. And now you're feeling that for the first time. I think it's just important to highlight. We all deal with that in a different way. I'd be curious, suffering impacts our marriages, right? And you don't have to go into any detail that you don't want to, but I would just be curious through this. And you kind of, you know, made mention to this, but I would just also, but I don't want to just assume. In one part, it sounds like this has brought you guys to a closeness or to a new level of understanding and endearment. At the same time, having to care for your spouse in the deepest of ways that she needed to care for you and the boys all at the same time, and her humanness of just like capacity. How was that process for your marriage? Or maybe a better question would be, What were some of the things that you learned through that process of how to serve each other? Like, how did you learn to serve her when you could barely do anything? And obviously for her, it was in some ways serving you through caring. But like, where were some of those moments? What were some of the things that you guys learned through that pain and suffering? Or some of the things that we could maybe get trapped in for others that are listening that are maybe in that space?
Yeah, I would say it definitely, the journey of suffering brought a lot of things we'd swept under the rug to light. So we are doing, I feel as peaceful and happy in my marriage right now as I ever have.
Wow.
And I wouldn't have said that 1 year ago, but because a lot of stuff came to light, and I think what I'm saying is both of us processed that really maturely, I believe, with God and community and professional help. And one example I can offer that may be surprising to some, and it puts me in the spot of vulnerability, so this would be one I'm comfortable offering, but is my wife had to be caretaker for me, but what I didn't know is that I have some deep lies that I've believed from childhood, that the best way to love someone else is to be super self-sufficient and low maintenance.
Wow.
And so while I went through all that stuff, and there were certain things she had to do, like keep my children away from clothing that I had worn and things like that, she also would say, like, Tyler barely slowed down. Like, every moment that he could maintain normalcy, he did. Everything that he could physically, like, sit and participate in, he did. And I see back so many moments now where I saw her trying to encourage me to let myself be weak. And I wasn't, because I thought to love her is to keep this from affecting her as much as humanly possible. And what I learned is it's actually really hard to love someone who isn't willing to be weak. Because when we are weak, we make space for someone else to come to us in the strength of love. And I have done a very poor job throughout my marriage of owning my weaknesses with my wife and letting her love me in the place of my flaw and my weakness, because I'm not comfortable with that and because I've believed some lies. So going through cancer isn't the only time I've done that. I've done that over and over and over again in every way I can in ordinary life. But it took going through cancer, coming out the other side, and seeing that the way I showed up in cancer somehow stunted her ability to process it in real time and everything, like you were saying, because I was on paper going through something life-threatening, but she was experiencing me trying to avoid her feeling that reality. And so anyway, I learned a lot about embracing weakness as a way of making space for love, and unlearning the exact opposite, trying to be strong as a way to love somebody else.
Wow. There's a lot of things I feel about what you're saying. This is a very similar dynamic with many marriages I know, including mine. And it's interesting because Elizabeth, if she was here, and we've talked about this before, she would say, like, I'm more on your end. Like, Tyler, I'm more on your end. Like, to like, if she feels like she's inconveniencing me, if she feels like she's a burden, she immediately feels like she's not being a good spouse, all these different things, which,
yeah.
But what you're articulating, I'm so glad you articulated it, because I think it's going to speak to her specifically. So even if this is just for her, I think you just gave her a lot of hope and encouragement. But just the realization of what you just articulated, that to be able to be vulnerable and to be able to be loved and served and caring for someone, you said it in a better way than I think most people even think it. And thank you for helping with that framework, because I think no matter what your disposition is, whether you believe the lies or not, I think it's really important for us to have that vulnerability, openness, weakness, even with our spouse. And yeah, there's a lot I'm processing in real time. So I really appreciate you saying that, because it's a very important truth. We could talk about so many things. The thing I really want to ask you about, just even as we close our time, is you're known for prayer, which is both good and probably overwhelming or weird, or maybe you love it, maybe you don't. Maybe there feels like pressure, maybe it doesn't. I don't want to assume any of that for you. But what I really want to ask is, as a person who thinks about prayer, writes about prayer, talks about prayer, I would love to know, with like, what does your prayer life look like now? And again, I'm sure there's certain rhythms and practices, and I'd love to hear those like rhythms and practices. But I also want to know specifically, how are you praying for your kids? What does that look like as a father to your kids? Like,
yeah,
what time do you spend and invest in that? What does that look like? Even what are some of those prayers? And then secondarily, how are you attempting, as we all, because we're all just attempting, how are you teaching your kids to engage with that medium of prayer?
Yeah. So in terms of how I pray for my kids, I would say two really simple things.
Okay.
I think my answers to all of this are going to be pretty simple. Like
even better.
I am constantly like on an investigative search for who is the true self within each one of my unique children.
Okay.
And so that's what I talk to God about a lot. Like, God, reveal to me. Like, let's use Amos, my 3-year-old's example. Like, reveal to me who you created him to be when you knit him together. And also reveal to me, like, the core fears and fallen patterns and lies that he is most susceptible to that are preventing his becoming or stunting his becoming. And so I try to pray their true self to the surface of their life. So the prayers I pray for each of my children are different.
Okay.
And I try to pray against those lies I can see they're susceptible to believe at this stage in their journey. Yeah. And that would be different for each one of them too.
Yeah.
And then I try to act in concert with those prayers. Like, how can I partner with the Spirit's work in Amos to spend time with him in a way that helps bring that true self that God created in him, that imago Dei part of him, more to the surface of his life. So that's that's what I'm thinking about. And I often ask God to guide me to places in scripture that could become like a hook for me to hang on to for a while for each of my children. Like, give me some words from psalm or a passage that would be like, that I could put in my mouth and keep there for months for Hank. Wow. And so that's a frequent request that I put before the Lord. And then how do I pray with my children?
Yeah.
Or how do I try to teach them to pray?
Exactly, yeah.
I would say a couple of things. I would say three things. The most moving and encouraging part of the biography of Jean Peterson that Wynn Collier wrote.
Yeah, yeah.
To me, was right at the beginning when his adult son was describing the prayer closet that he would see his dad praying in when he was a kid. And he could remember it. Remember what it was like to like roll up on his dad's prayer closet early in the morning. And I have a similar kind of setup on my front porch because I love to be outside, but it's got a candle and my Bible and my journal and a couple of other kind of sacred items to me sitting there. And my kids know, like, if they wake up early, and they're looking for their mom, they'll go find her in our room. And if they're looking for me to see, like, am I allowed to get up yet or something, they'll come out there. And occasionally, one of them will say, Dad, I'm going to sit with you while you do your prayers today. Or if they wake up, I'll say, oh, man, it's too early to get up, but you want to come and sit with me while I do this? And and so they just know, like, that's what that's for. So it's think living my own prayer life in front of them
is
really important. And always welcoming their interruption to it. So I also don't ever want them to feel like oh, no, Dad's praying right now. Because I know that I have decades stretching endlessly in front of me where no one will interrupt my prayers. And I will wish they would.
That's good perspective. Yes.
And so when my kids come and interrupt my prayers, I either invite them to join it or I try to greet their interruption as a different way of communing with the presence of the very same God that I'm meeting through that prayer. So their presence is a medium of prayer in that sense. Then the other things I would say is, you know, the latest book I wrote, The Dedication, it says, for Hank, carry the fire. And that's language I use with my children that's really important to me. It's in reference to the Holy Spirit. So when Hank came to faith, which would be a little over a year ago now, I say to him almost every morning when I'm taking him to school, like, hey, man, just remember, you're the one that carries the fire. And that shorthand between he and I of, like, if your buddies are picking on somebody, you don't have to join in to feel a part of them because you're the dangerous one. That's what I say to him. You have the Spirit of the living God within you. So you don't have to be afraid of anybody else, being left out by anybody else. Being like,
that's such
you are armed with the love that's going to outlive all this stuff. And so you get to distribute that love. Like, you have the secret weapon. You carry the fire. And I want my children to feel that. And so that's what I want to talk to them about. If, like, because God lives within you, like, you are the one who's a threat to this world. This world is not a threat to you. You know, he who is in you is greater. I really want them to know that. And then the other thing is, when we pray in the evenings, I pray with each of them as I'm putting them to bed, when I'm the one putting them to bed. And when it's me praying, I always pray the same thing, which is, God, thank you so much that I get to be Simon's dad, because you could have picked anybody. And I get to be the one on the front row of his becoming. And I get to be the one that he runs to when he gets hurt. And I get, you know, I just, that's what I mean the most. That's my most honest prayer. And it's what I want them to hear me saying every night when I'm talking to Jesus. And when they pray, I always teach them just to tell God about the day they just lived. I'm like, honestly, he just really loves you. And so he likes to hear about your day. Because I'm just trying to teach them to talk to God conversationally. So right now, the way Hank does that, for instance, is he tells God his favorite part of every day. So when I'm like, every night, I'm like, all right, man, you do the prayer. And he, that's where he goes to. He's like, all right, Jesus, the best part of today was. And then and that's kind of his dear God.
You know,
that's his wind up. And then he starts thinking about, what was it? And he just tells it to Jesus.
I love that.
And I'm like, and I've actually instructed him, this is, you know, take it or leave it. I'm just saying, I've told him, like, don't even thank him for it. Because I don't want you to feel like you're coming to God to tell him thanks for something. I want you to feel like I'm coming to God because he really enjoys my company. And he just wants to know which part of the day that he watched me live I liked best. So just, like, let him in on it. Because I want to teach them prayer is just the art of letting God in on my life. He already knows everything. He knows what I need. Because what I think is, if they can learn that, then they will go on letting God in on their life in more mature ways as they grow up. And that's the foundation I want to build on with them when it comes to prayer. Wow. And then actually, maybe I'll mention one other thing. I think this is important. It's been a big learning for me. So once a month, one Friday morning every month, Hank and I do like a formal like discipleship.
Okay.
Where we go out for coffee and he gets any pastry he wants. Dude. And I get a coffee. We spend an hour together in the morning before school.
Okay.
We engage some Bible story and we try to have a significant conversation. We have like structure for it. And one thing I've noticed is that I'm often trying to do too much and not let God just get the work done. So I've noticed that for Hank, for instance, and I suspect this to be true of all children around his age, doing some type of listening or prophetic prayer actually comes really naturally. And so I remember I was trying to teach Hank something from this Bible story and then was trying to get him to relate it to his life.
Okay.
I don't remember the story. Let's say it's the one where the paralyzed guy's friends let him down through the roof and Jesus heals him. So I'm like, do you have a friend who there's just something
totally preaching
you,
to him.
You do in some way is limited? Like, how could you live this?
Dad's a professional communicator. You know? You should get this.
Yeah. How could you live this? And he's kind of like just not tracking.
Yeah.
And then I was like, hey, why don't we just pray? Jesus, is there anything you want to talk to me about?
Wow.
And then wait for 30 seconds. And I was like, and dude, it's going to feel like an eternity for you.
Yeah.
And then you just tell me what came to mind. Wow. And he was like, okay. And we did that. And then I was like, what came to mind? He was like, describe this vivid picture. And I was like, okay, cool.
Wow.
Why do you think God brought that to mind? And then he basically just applied the Bible story. And I was like, yeah, I think that sounds that sounds right.
Wow.
Why don't you go live that way today? And he was like, cool.
Wow.
And so I just think I would not sell short the fact that children have a very lively imagination and that God is pursuing them more than you.
Yes.
And to teach them methods of prayer that maybe you've assumed are for the uber mature, like how to hear God speak to you. And just to give God space and see, like, I wonder if God's speaking to my 8-year-old.
Yes.
And they actually have no resistance to what he might be saying. So I would also just share that as my own failure and encouragement to let God do the work for you.
What a gift you just gave to so many people to remember the power of the Spirit's work and investment in their life and their story. Thank you for depositing into those listening. Thank you for living a life faithfully. Thank you for giving us framework for prayer. You know, I think everyone has a different call in their life. And you have a bunch of people that I'm sure in different moments and stages of your life have affirmed the call and affirmed God's calling and gifting on you. But when you can make the complex and the seemingly lofty, simple and palpable and digestible in a way that people want to then engage in prayer and am excited, you know, make kids even excited to pray, that's a gift. And so thank you for sharing your gift with us. Thank you for sharing just the story of suffering. And for those who want to continue to follow along in your journey, obviously, I think I would imagine you're going to continue to write. And so I'm sure you're writing something. I would imagine, I don't know this, but you're probably writing something right now.
I am.
You are. Okay.
Yeah.
So you're in the process of right now. You're working through stuff right now. I can't wait to hear what that is. I don't even know what that one is. Can you even talk about it yet?
Yeah.
What is that? We'll end here, but I just want to, what are you working through, you know,
Now? I'm actually working on two projects right now that will be released each in the next couple of years.
Okay.
Well, one just came together quickly. One is a 40-day Lenten prayer journey.
Oh, okay.
And like a 40-day devotional.
Okay.
Rooted in prayer.
Yes.
Journeying with Jesus from the wilderness to the cross.
Yeah.
It's actually using prayer and poetry. And then the other is a book on the true and false self.
These are exciting times. So we'll keep everyone up to date, but We'll have all the stuff. If you're listening here, we'll have stuff in the show notes. You can check out Bridgetown. If you're in Portland, come to Bridgetown. It'd be great. Thank you for the work you're doing. Thank you for being faithful. Thing, thanks man. For being an example. And thanks for just sharing some time today. I know you got a lot going on, so thank you for giving me a sliver of the time, and we're grateful for it.
Yeah, it was fun to chat.
Yeah.